welcome to Vision Scope, a program designed to educate and inform on matters relating to disabilities. My name is Wilbert Williams. It's my pleasure to introduce our guest today. He is Michael Chamberlain. He is a businessman, and he is other things too, but he's going to tell you all about them. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Rocco. Hey, Willie. How you guys doing? It's a pleasure to be here.
I am doing well, thanks.
And it's also a beautiful, beautiful day here in Medellin, Colombia.
Yes,
as it is,
yes.
Every day, springtime weather, 365.
Yes. Years ago, I had the privilege of spending 2 weeks in Colombia, which was very interesting. I was with a group of people who, you know, we were studying international relations.
Sure. And it was a lot more interesting back in the day, I'm sure. But
now it's
calmed down a bit, and you know, it's the never had tourism here. It was never a thing. So it's a new thing here the last couple of years, and it's really picking up. I can't
well imagine, because in those days we had to be careful where we went, and
back in those days was the guerrilla and the government.
Yeah. You still do, but you know, you just have to keep your head on a swivel and not do dangerous things with dangerous people.
That's right.
You should be okay. I know a lot of people have spent many years here and never had issues, but there's guys that come into town all the time and they'll get mugged twice in the first month. It just depends what you do. You know, I'm 55 years old. I'm pretty lame. I pretty much keep to myself. I'm home by 10 p.m. on the weekends. You know,
a homely man.
It's safe for me.
Michael, let's start at the very beginning.
Okay.
Who is Michael Chamberlain?
Well, I like I said, I'm 55. I was born legally blind. My vision was about 20 over 800 from the time of birth. Corrected. As an adult, my vision is still a little bit worse than 20 over 200, which is still considered legally blind. So I grew up in Florida. I had a pretty tough upbringing because I did go to regular school. And like I say, I couldn't even wear glasses as a kid. The glasses were, I don't know, I would say about 4 inches thick and weighed about 5 pounds on my little tiny face. They just didn't work.
It's a lot of weight to carry around.
They just didn't work. It was like, it was impossible. It lasted 2 days. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, I felt guilty about it because glasses were super expensive back then, but I just couldn't wear them, you know.
Not to mention the
tease factor, you know.
What were things like for you in your early days, having some degree of sight loss and having to go through school and all of that? What was it like? Talk to us about that experience.
Honestly, it was, I classify it as a nightmare. I did not have the best upbringing. You know, my parents, they moved me every single year. One year I went to 3 different schools. So, and we didn't have a lot of money. So I guess everybody knows what it's like to be the new kid at school.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
But everybody also knows who gets picked on. It's the poor kid. That was me. That was me. It was the handicapped kid. That was also me. It was the new kid. That was also me. It was the smallest kid. That was also me. And to switch, like, in every time I would establish a relationship or a friendship or whatever, it was just boom, on the next thing. New teacher, new school, new, you know, and it was quite traumatic to even attend school. You know, I couldn't read the classroom numbers. I couldn't, You know, teachers would move me around, like literally sit me right in front of the board. Still didn't do any good. You know, I still couldn't see the board. And yeah, it was not that easy. And, you know, obviously being picked on, you know, you either took it or you didn't. But I was a fighter and I fought back. And there was a period between like 7th grade and 11th grade where I was literally in a fist fight every month.
I was going to ask you that, but you preempted me. You got into a number of fights.
Yeah, and, I mean,
you had to defend yourself.
There was no choice. I mean, it was either that or just, you know, I wasn't the main target, you know? I mean, I wasn't like that kid that gets bullied by everybody and this and that. But I was just the material for people to test, and I wasn't a good test because they didn't realize, you know, I will fight back.
Yes, yes.
You know, hey, my vision was poor, but I could fight. You know, I could. I was a trained wrestler and boxer at a young age, but they don't know that.
Yes, so they will test you.
Yeah.
And you had to rise to the occasion.
Right. So, I mean, even though I did and things worked out, it doesn't mean it wasn't very traumatic for me. I didn't like the fight. That was always the last resort. And I was never the one to suggest it.
But Tell me now. What were your favorite subjects in school?
Honestly, I've always been in the business since I was a little kid. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it was because we just didn't have money when I was little or what have you. But I've always been in the business and anything that had to do with that. Mm-hmm. But I did like civics and history and things like that. Things with stories more than like math and science,
yes.
Which to me was just more like memorization. So I'm not really a math guy. I'm into computers and stuff, but not. No, I'm not a math brain.
I suppose the time came when you had to leave school. What was it like making that transition from school
well,
to
I
work?
Never finished. I never finished high school.
You never?
Nope. No, because I really did not have any supervision growing up, and I just, you know, skipped as many days as I could and got away with as much as I can and slacked off. And, you know, I tried to pass, you know, just like that last minute, but I got in an unfortunate situation where I was like a credit short to go into my senior year. And I figured I would take it in summer school, but during summer school, that year they lifted the requirements to graduate the following year, 2 more credits. So I'd had to go back to school an entire year and I did not want to do it. So I sneakily enrolled in college, even though I didn't have a high school degree. I guess I was dumb. I don't know. I took my entrance exams and everything, and when they called me in to schedule me, they're like, we can't put you in school. You don't have a high school diploma. Mm-hmm. But you did well on your entrance exams. I guess we'll enroll you, but you're not going to get a certificate until you take care of that one thing first. So I did get into college, and immediately I met one of my mentors, he was my business professor, and he is the one that talked me out of the business administration program and in becoming an entrepreneur.
Ah, so that was where you got your early start.
Right. Well, I always wanted to be a business person. I was even into that in high school. I was in junior achievement for 2 years. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's where different high schools.
Our system is sort of different here, but tell us about it.
Yeah, it's a program for high school students who are interested in becoming business people. And each high school creates a company, a real company, incorporates it. We have mentors from the community that help us build this company. We select our products, we manufacture, or, you know, whatever we do, we sell. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the year, it's kind of a competition, who made the most money, that kind of stuff. And I did 2 years in that program. It was.
But before we go that far, Mike, maybe you can brought us back. Tell us a little before you actually get into the real deal, the real business. You actually said to me a couple of days ago, at a young 13, 14-year-old, you were actually basically, excuse me, started business by selling oranges and also doing business with immigrants. So maybe you can tell us about that as a young child, legally blind.
Right. I was living out in the boonies. I mean, there was no opportunity. I'm like 13, 14 years old. You know, there's no opportunity to make money. And even if I could get a job, I think the legal working age was like 15 for summer jobs or something like that. So my dad always said, if you can't find a job, create one. So the only people working around me were migrant workers picking oranges. So me and my friend approached them and we're like, how do we get a job picking oranges with you? And they're like, well, we can't help you with that. But, you know, we get paid $5 for each of these containers. If you guys fill them up, we'll give you $4, you know, so they'll make a dollar or whatever. And, you know, and they didn't do it to make money, but they just did it to help us. And trust me, we didn't do it for very long. It's super hard work. It would take the two of us at least 3 hours to fill up one $4. You know, I call them kiddie pools. It was like a kiddie pool size. You'd have to fill up. You know, we take our newspaper delivery bags and climb up ladders and twist the oranges off the trees and stuff like that. So I did whatever I could to make money. I took a job picking worms out of the ground for a fishing, a bait company, you know, and it's just literally sitting in a mud pit measuring worms, and I got paid per bucket per like dozen worms. Yeah, it's pretty horrible work, but you know, when you're poor and you got nothing, you do what you got to do.
but to get into formal business, you had to undergo a level of discipline and financing and all of that. How did that all start? How did it start?
Well, I've always dabbled in businesses, you know, like I had a business when I was in college. I had a buddy of mine that was a lawn business. Obviously, I couldn't drive or cut lawns myself being legally blind, but I had the money to buy the equipment. I had a friend that would do the work and I could get the jobs. I built the schedule. And so I had little businesses like that. But I think what helped me along is I started working at a young age. You know, I started bagging groceries at like 15 years old while I'm going to school. And then I worked in the restaurant industry. I worked in every position as a host, as a, I worked my way to a busboy when I was 17 years old. I lived on my own. I didn't have a diploma, you know, kind of going nowhere. I was going to college part-time, but I was bussing tables at 17 years old. But believe it or not, back then, that I was making enough money to survive. But my opportunity came. So I'm at 17. I'm working on the beach at a really nice fine dining beachfront restaurant. And I really wanted to become a waiter. But, you know, my vision was limited. But back then, we didn't use computers. I knew the layout of the place. I knew the menu. And they said, okay, well, you know, we'll train you over the next 6 months. So I spent 6 months training to be a professional waiter. And most of the waiters there are in their 30s or 40s. So for an 18-year-old to get an opportunity was pretty big. And literally on my 18th birthday, they put me out on the floor. And I had a pretty good job throughout college. And, you know, it was a very well-paying job. It was flexible. I was able to go to school. So, and I built a lot of confidence being able to do that. Then from there, I got a lot of experience under my belt by going also in the restaurant industry, but there's a program through the state of Florida Division of Blind Services in which they put entrepreneurs in charge of cafeterias and snack bars and roadside vending stations along the highways in the state of Florida. It's almost exclusively for the rights of blind people to run these establishments.
It's the vending services.
It's through the Division of Blind Services, but it's under a federal program from the 1930s called the Randolph-Shepard Act.
Oh yes, is it the one? Is it the one where you operate kiosks?
Yes. Yes. So I went through the whole program because it sounded wonderful, especially given my background in business. and in restaurants. You know, being at a young age, I'm like, hey, this is right up my alley. I'm going to kill at this. So I sign up, I do the mentorships, you know, I have to tag along. I did meet another mentor there, a gentleman that was completely blind, ran one of the largest courthouse restaurants in our area. So very happy with that. I worked with him for a while. I worked with another mentor, Debbie Hayatella. She was our district manager. I did great there. Then it was off to training, which the training program is 6 months in Daytona. Okay. I was pretty much done with the program day one when I got there. That's how far ahead I was. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I've already studied all the books. I have the visual acuity to my advantage. You know, I'm literally borderline. So I'm not worried about using knives and all the training that they have to go through. So I was kind of bored getting into it after about 3 months. But then the program, they started to use me. They started pulling in their weaker managers, the people who have already been trained, already been placed in restaurants, and they sent me out to fix their stuff. And I took over three restaurants in 3 months. The first one, I tripled sales, and the next two, I doubled sales in all of them. So I was very happy with myself. I graduated from that. I got back, I started bidding on locations, you know, because obviously I'm going to get whatever location I bid on because I'm the best manager, right? Wrong. I learned at that point that they are in a seniority system. So it doesn't matter how good of a manager you are, how good your numbers are. It matters how long you've been in the program, and that's that. So I quit because some of those guys were in the program for like 20 years. I'm like, I'm not waiting around 20 years. Otherwise, I would have just had to take these cheap, cheap locations, which already I've been running locations four times the size.
Would you like to share with our listeners some experiences that you had while you were on that program?
I think it's a fantastic program, and it has changed since, you know, this is like 25 years ago that I was in the program. So it's no longer a seniority / good old boy network. You know, it's now based on actual numbers and criteria and profit margins and things like that. So it is a very good opportunity, you know, for blind people particularly. So when I did get out of that program, you know, my job prospects were quite limited, still didn't get that diploma. I didn't want, you know, to work in a restaurant the rest of my life. You know, it wasn't an easy job for me. I mean, I was able to get it done with my vision, but you know, it wasn't easy.
Was anybody ever tried to shortchange you while you were on that program? No.
No. And as a matter of fact, when my mentor, Jim, he used to run his register. He's completely blind. We always cashed out even. People are honest. You know, as a matter of fact, he's completely blind. And we used to have scales for items like salads and yogurts and stuff. Mm-hmm. And people would have to tell him how much it weighs for him to calculate it. So there was a trust fit. Yeah. Yeah. You would think that, you know, people would be dishonest, but they're not. I did catch an employee stealing from me once, but that's a different story.
that's amazing. You had more problems inside than you had.
Right. Outside. Right. Exactly.
Yes. So, what are some of the issues that confronted you then? Because as a blind person, you must be confronted by some issues while you're on a program like that. What were some of the things you had to look out for? Honestly,
the program, I didn't have any issues with being in that program because it was designed around blind people. There was no requirement to drive. I had vending routes, but I could do them all on a bus. They were built on a bus route. You know what I'm saying? So, or I had employees that would go do that stuff, you know? So the business was literally built around, it was the perfect business for me. It was just unfortunate that, you know, they had that issue back then. If I'd have stuck it out for a couple of years, I could have moved up, and you could definitely move up. There were, there's people making a quarter million dollars a year in this program that are blind.
But you have to be
So,
determined. You have
yeah,
to.
now you do. Now it's competitive. Before, like I say, it really wasn't. So, and it was hard for me to sit there and watch managers take facilities that I should be running, because I produce better numbers than them,
Oh,
But
what made you move on then? Because there
well,
must have come a time when you decided, oh, this is
basically
enough.
at that point, I was a paid manager and I didn't have my own location because I did not want to move out of the area. So I did meet my wife then. I met her in my restaurant. She was one of my customers. Actually, I had a school across the street. It was an English as a second language school. I found out they didn't have a cafeteria, so I sent my employees over there to give out samples and snacks. And that's one of the reasons I was able to double sales at one of my locations is because I got that whole school to start coming into my cafeteria for lunch. And she was
Good move, good move.
Wow, that's amazing, man. So, like, Michael, what is it that you used to be selling like that? All what you used to
Well,
be
that
selling.
cafeteria was a full service cafeteria, which means we had a buffet breakfast, pancakes, sausage, eggs, sandwiches to order. Then we had lunch. We were closed by 4 p.m. in the afternoon, but we had a full lunch buffet. We had sandwich and salad stations, soups, soda machines. I'd say that particular location, we probably had like seating for 80 people. But our main job was to service that building, and that building was a state building. It was a very busy location. And in the afternoon, we sold cookies and soft drinks and yogurts and stuff like that. And
So
it was a
that
good
was
deal
really
because
profitable.
it was a good deal because I got to keep all the profits. So I got the building for free. So we were there to service them to provide a cafeteria for the state employees in that building. So they give us the rent for free. They give us the phone for free. They give us the electricity for free. So
You couldn't complain.
all I had to pay for was my employees and my products. That's it. So if you're a good manager,
How many employees do you had at that time?
that location, I had about myself, two full time and one part time.
So
So,
you have other person used to be doing the cooking and stuff like that, right?
yes. Yeah, I had a great chef when I got to that location, but he's the one I caught stealing. I had to get rid of him. Hired my best friend because he was able to get me there at 5 a.m. and 5 a.m. in the morning. It wasn't, it wasn't a lightweight job, but for me, it was an easy job. You just show up. It wasn't an after work type job. I didn't worry about it once I left. It was pretty easy to run. It was good money, but unfortunately, I couldn't scale that up. And I was just making okay money.
After the vending, what did you move to?
That was a tough one. So here's where my options. Continue working in grocery stores, bagging groceries. I couldn't do cashiering. I tried to get a job in retail. They fired me about 5 minutes into training when they realized I couldn't run the cash register.
A blind man can't do this.
Well, I mean, when I think back at it, they should have made accommodations because I could run the cash register. I did
Oh,
run cash
yes.
registers.
Oh,
They didn't
yes.
give me an opportunity to run the cash register. So
You are biased.
that was quite embarrassing and a bit traumatic experience. But I didn't want to go back into restaurants. I didn't want to go backwards into like grocery bagging groceries or stocking shelves even. And I didn't have transportation to do any type of outside job. And where I live, transportation's not good. The bus was limited, cabs were expensive, and it's too hot to walk anywhere. I'm in Florida. So I'm limited to inside sales jobs. That's it. You know, for my skill level, no high school diploma. These were the jobs I could get. And most of them are horrible.
So
But
how long did you stay in that kind of job
I would
situation?
say in about 4 years, I probably went through four companies.
So you moved on rapid.
Yeah, but I mean, it was great because I worked in so many different industries and in so many different selling styles and things like that. Like for one, and I've met some mentors along the way. I've, you know, challenged myself. I learned the skill of selling on the phone. You know, that is something that I saw myself on even playing ground with sighted people because it's the gift of the gab. It's that's all it is. The person on the other end of the phone, they can't di differentiate if you're blind or not. What's your excuse? You know, well, at least that's what I told myself when it worked. You know, so I didn't feel sorry for myself on that job or anything like that. You know, it sucked. It's not a good job. If you ever sat on an auto dialer for 40 hours a week doing 300 calls a day, getting the phone slammed down in your ear. But it builds character, and I did it in every realm. I've called households. That experience, some of it was good, some of it was bad. I worked in the timeshare industry. I learned a lot in that industry. I learned a lot of marketing working in that. I worked as a representative for a hair and nail salon product company for professionals.
You're an all-rounder. You really
Yeah.
span quite a cross section of jobs.
Right. And I learned a little bit everywhere. For instance, at that, I was selling acrylic nail products to professionals, and an interesting thing happened when I was at that job. It was a, we did tanning products, we manufactured them, and we also did nail products. We had our own labels, but we also did private labels for other companies. I was a representative in the nail part. And then one day I'm working there, and then there's this guy walking through the office in a suit. I didn't know who he was. I'd never seen him before. But I just happened to be on fire that day. Like I say, there's like 60 people in this company, but I was literally the only one on the board. I had tons of sales, big sales too, not just, you know, little kits like everybody else was selling. I was doing the wholesale to the. Anyway, that guy got introduced to me by my boss. And we had like 15-minute discussion, and that was it. I forgot about the guy, never seen him again, never seen him since. Until about a month later, I walk in the office. All the employees are there, but the bosses are gone. This guy is like, "Hey, Mike, come here." Calls me in the office, and apparently, I was the only one in the company he ever met. But he informed me that he was taking over that company because they defaulted on a loan. He's now the owner. And he wanted to work with me and, you know, moving it forward. But the problem was he didn't want everybody else to go. So literally my first task was to go out and tell everybody that they're fired, which was not pleasurable until it got to my two bosses, and then it was a pleasure. But anyway, I worked with this guy for about a year and a half, and he allowed me to do so much in that company. I was allowed to create my own product line. You know, I learned how to work with private label. I now became the sole account rep for the entire company. We moved around a little bit with that company, and I'd say about 2 weeks into the arrangement, I thought I was going to lose my job because he took an office that is was good 30 minutes from me. And at this point, he didn't know I was legally blind. He just knew me as an inside sales rep. And, you know, so I called him. I'm like, you know, I told my wife, I'm like, I'm probably going to lose this job because there's no way, because she goes the opposite direction to school. There's no way she could drive me there and come back later in the day to pick me up. And, but this is how good the guy was to me. He's like, "You know what? Don't worry about it. I was going to hire somebody else anyway. I'm going to make his first job responsibility to pick you up and drop you off from work."
That's
So
marvelous.
so
Yes, that
he
was a
treated me well.
breakthrough.
Yeah, he taught me a lot. And like I say, little things like that that happened gave me confidence. Same thing happened with the timeshare company. When I started working there, we had a whole office full of people. They downsized. Before you know it, I'm in the corporate office running the whole thing by myself.
Yes. So you really gained that quite a lot of experience.
I loved it. I
Yes.
mean, as much as it, was not fun going into work and doing that actual task of doing the dials, I did love it eventually. But then I took my first tech job. I never sold technology products before. I was never into technology. I never even owned a computer. But the hiring manager said, "Oh, we're just selling books and CDs, training materials." He goes, "Give it a day or two, you'll figure it out." So I go there, and this, like I say, was new for me. The sales office had, I think it was like 18 salespeople, all guys, all young guys. I was probably like 24 at the time. Most of these guys were like 20, 22. And so I got in there, and I remember it was like the first week of February. And I needed to tag with somebody to learn this, the pitch and the product and everything like that. I only did that for one day. So we had a sales contest the very first month. And I was a brand new employee who started a week later than everybody else, and I won it.
Oh, amazing. Yes.
That's how hungry I was then,
Yes,
which was
yes.
great. It was, I won a big screen TV, and they sent my wife flowers, which was nice. But it just, I had that confidence. And so I only worked at that tech company for about 4 months, because what had happened is I'd start to follow up with my customers to upsell them, resell them, and because those are your best customers, the ones you can go back to who purchased from you before, who are satisfied. Well, we had all kinds of shipping problems, customer service problems, and then, I was getting burnt doing the dials, and I'm like, you know what? This isn't that hard. I could do what these people are doing better than what they're doing. So I told these coworkers, I'm like, hang back, give me a little time. I'm coming back in a couple weeks. So I started my first real company right then and there. I was able to
Yes.
get four of those guys to jump over with me.
Michael,
Yes, sir.
there came a time when you decided to be on your own, and as you say, working through agents, and you are now a successful businessman. What tell us what you currently do at the moment.
Well, right now, I do a lot of things, all entrepreneurial. I have a digital marketing agency where I do web design, development, search engine optimization. I also build my own online businesses and sell them. Kind of like people would build a house and flip it. I kind of do that with businesses. I
Ah,
also
interesting.
flip domains. I buy expired domains, some of them search engine optimization related, and I sell those as well. So basically, I'm using all the skills that I learned throughout the years. For instance, when I was with the tech company I told you, when I did finally leave them, I was able to get a few of those employees over to start my business with me. And luckily, I was one of the top salesmen there. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't have come with me. They would have done it on their own. But within 2 years of launching that company, it was nominated for Entrepreneur Magazine's Hot 100 Fastest Growing Companies in the United States. And I was a millionaire. I had like 55 employees, Microsoft partner. So it happened really quick for me, which was great, but it was definitely a head spinner.
How many people do you currently employ?
Just me. No, I haven't had employees in 20 years. It's a story behind that. I'm not a big fan of managing a bunch of employees. You know, unless it pays well like it did there.
And but I don't know if you ever... They say, you know, the hardest part of any business is managing people.
Salespeople, they're very unique people. They're hard to wrangle, especially inside salespeople. So, but they did me well. But my next company I started, it was the same concept, but I replaced the salespeople with online sales.
Okay.
And that company... within 2 years, I was earning as much as I was with 50 employees working by myself from home.
Yes. Would you say then that what you're doing now is worth your while financially?
Absolutely. Yeah. But I, you know, one of the reasons I came on this show and, you know, to talk about, and my goal is to help blind people in their vocation. You know, unfortunately,
you know there is a tremendous opportunity coming up, which I think Rocco probably filled you in on already. On Sunday coming, we are hosting a webinar. It's only 2 hours.
Okay.
But we would be happy to have you come and talk to us about marketing your brand.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yes.
So anyway, my goal is to, you know, help blind people with their vocation. Now, digital marketing is probably not for blind people because that involves, you know, websites and sites and things like that. But my strong emphasis is on sales.
Okay.
A blind person should and could be able to sell just as much as a sighted person. Now, they're going to have a little bit more difficult time getting set up with auto dialers and dealing with software and things like that. But I know a lot of salespeople who are making $100,000 a year or more. And I know that blind people could do this, but they did not have the luck of the confidence, and they weren't forced into it like I was. You know what I'm saying? So they'll never know that they can.
What are some of the key things, that key requirements that blind people would need to go into marketing? If you were to summarize the key elements that are required.
Honestly, I just think good sales training. And knowing your product and believing in it. I could never sell. I went through some telemarketing jobs. I quit within a day or two. I can't sell anything I don't believe in.
You must believe in the product.
I absolutely must believe in the product. Yeah. I've walked into the sales rooms where, you know, they would call people and say, "You want a vacation?" "No, I'm not going there." You know, it's like, yes, no. Yes. If it's not completely on the up and up and honest, you know, but truthfully, blind people typically have a gift for gab, a quick wit, a humor, a good base for a salesperson, you know?
Michael, I want to switch a little bit. We've been talking business and people will leave thinking that you're all business. I want to learn a little bit about the other side of Michael. And the first question I'm going to ask you is, how did you meet your wife?
I met her in my restaurant. She was a customer. The funny thing is, I always had an eye for her, even though there were dozens of young, cute European, South American. I always had an eye for her. She was from Belgium. So early on, all these girls, all these kids used to come in with like fresh 20s every morning. Yeah, and they just hand it to me as the cashier. Why did they do that? Probably the same reason I did that first couple of weeks when I was here in Colombia. They don't know the currency. They can't count the currency. So this girl, her name's Natalie. She's come through my line and she didn't speak a whole lot of English, and obviously I didn't speak French. So I was flirting with her every day, and every day she'd give me a $20 bill, and every day, no matter what she purchased, I'd give her $19 back. Come to find out, years and years later, she never knew that, but I did that. This went on for weeks. So I was pretty much buying her lunch every day. But one day she asked me out, and that was that.
I am curious. I still want to know a little bit more. What drew you to her? What was the drawing card?
You want the truth?
Yes, and nothing but the truth.
I was dating a very, very beautiful, hot, you know, girl at that time for almost a year. Mm-hmm. She even lived with me briefly. Probably one of the most serious relationships I've ever had. That girl cheated on me twice. I was done with American girls. I was done. And then here comes this cute girl. Never had a boyfriend. You know, she's not Americanized in that way. You know, she didn't wear shorts up all the way. You know, she was just, I'm like, that's my girl. Yes. That's my girl, you know. It was instant. And, you know, we got off to a rocky start, real rocky. I don't know if you want me to get much detail, but
not necessarily, unless you want to disclose.
But no, it's actually a humorous thing. Our first date was a bar brawl. My ex-girlfriend was there, her ex-boyfriend. They started something. He jumped me. I got sucker punched while I was talking to two girls. 8 police cars. My new girlfriend thought she was going to get deported. She never wanted to see me again. Yeah, but we made it. That was our first date, though.
That was certainly a rocky date.
I didn't go to jail. The other guy did, so no worries there.
Yes, that was a rocky start.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, we ended up getting married. We had 3 wonderful children. My children are grown now. I just married 2 of my daughters last year. They're all doing great. They're all back in Florida. My wife and I did separate 3 years ago, but we spent 30 years together. I was fortunate enough to have a stay-at-home mom till my wife was like 36. She didn't have to get a job, so she was able to stay home. She was a great mother. She was Buccaneers Mom of the Year, great volunteer. We were very involved with our church. Our kids traveled the world with the youth. They've been to Africa. They've been to Belize. They've been, you know, so.
That's great. That's great stuff, man.
Great stuff. A full life.
Yeah. You love to see where a family could do those kind of stuff, man. You know what I'm saying? That's really great stuff.
A totally different phase of life. Now, you know, I'm kind of on my own, seeing the world. You know, semi-retired. Not working too hard.
Without going into personal details. Mm-hmm. Why would you guys separate after 30 years? Is it that aging drive you apart or what? What? Talk to me.
It's really tough to describe that. It's a dynamic. You know, we're damaged children, both of us, her and I. So, you know, I don't point fingers.
Yes. Yeah.
But I knew for a long time it was time for me to go. But I did stick around for my children.
Okay. And they're grown now, so you're free.
Yes, absolutely. And the mother and I are on good terms. She's a good person.
You're still, Willie,
that is so amazing, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, a lot of time, some people break up and stuff like that, and oh my gosh, when they hear about that guy or even that woman, it's like they want to vomit. But here, Michael is actually coming in, despite the separation and stuff like that, he's still happy to say she was a good mother to his children. And she's a mother of my children,
and she's a great mother. I mean, what can you do?
Definitely got to respect that.
Yes, and you are still friends on a different
level.
Yeah, that is beautiful, man. That's beautiful.
I'm very proud of what her and I did together. So, I mean, I'm not going to throw away that.
Oh no. And she helped to make you the person that you are.
Yeah.
Michael, are you any good in the kitchen?
I actually am. I love to cook.
What
And
do you love to cook most?
well, I like to cook international dishes. I actually am staying with some Colombians down here. I have been for about a year and a half. I could be on my own, and I used to have my own. When I travel around, I stay at Airbnbs. It's the easiest thing to do. You can rent them by the month, 2, 3 months at a time. And I was staying at these Airbnbs, and I wanted to stay with some Colombians, so I started staying in like some home shares, and then I met this nice Colombian couple, and we've been living together for a year and a half now. And I love it because he's learning English and I'm learning Spanish, and he's a grill master and a very good Colombian cook. So I'm actually learning how to cook Colombian food pretty good here.
Yes, sounds
We
good.
did Colombian lasagna last week. We did chicharrón, barbecues. So yeah, I love cooking.
Yes.
So
I think I'm
maybe Willie, one of the things
okay
you could
at it.
tell us some of the places that you're traveling the world, and which place really capture your heart.
Well, I was very fortunate. The funny thing is, I lived such a sheltered life till I met my wife when I was 24 years old. Like I say, I grew up very poor. I lived like an hour from Disney World, never been there in my life for 22 years. Never been there, never been on vacation. Don't recall ever even going into restaurants as a kid. I never flew on an airplane. But as soon as I made my money and had my company and got a passport, I was gone. My wife was very well traveled. When I met her, her father owned the second largest travel agency in Europe, so which came with all the perks. She had
Yes,
vacationed. She had
yes.
vacationed. She was a bit spoiled. She had vacationed everywhere in the world prior to meeting me. She had already been to the United States 3 times. She's been to Russia. She's been to Greece. She's been to, pretty much everywhere. So,
Did the family accept you easily? You being blind,
absolutely.
you
Oh,
didn't
yeah.
have any problems.
Funny thing is, her family did, but my wife didn't believe me at first. She thought, "Hey, there's more to this story. He got a DUI." Because, like I say, she never knew I was legally blind, even when I was running that restaurant.
Yes, because
She
you
did
have so
not
much
know until
sight.
I had to tell her on like the third or fourth date. I'm like, "Hey, I don't drive." But I think I think she realized that when I had to get my roommate to pick her up. But she didn't believe me at first. She was like,
Yeah.
no. But like I say, that was my private hell. It's like I almost wish I was more blind sometimes so people will understand that no, I'm not drunk, I'm not stupid,
Yeah.
I'm not, what I'm saying?
And you're
It's
not
like
lying.
I get misunderstood, because just people don't know. But like I was telling Rocco the other day, they don't realize the things that we have to go through. Like when I go to a restaurant, I need to get up to go to the bathroom. I'll walk dead center in between those doors until I can read it, and usually that's only about a foot in front of it. And people are looking at me like, why'd that guy almost walk in the women's room? And then when I
Yes.
come back to my table, before I leave, I have to memorize what my companion's shirt color is. Otherwise, I'll never find my table. But
Yes.
people don't realize that this dialogue's going on in my head because I just look like a normal guy, So
Yes. You have to set up your own GPS.
exactly. But I think given the hardship and what I had to go through growing up, and it did help me. As much as it sucked, it helped me,
So where's your parents today?
All my parents and grandparents are gone, unfortunately. They're no longer with us. Pretty young too, so yeah,
Do
I mean that's rough.
you listen to a lot of music?
I do. I love
What kind of
music.
music do
I
you
think
like?
that is really also a blind person thing. I mean, I have never met a blind person who's not like really, really into music.
So true, so
I
true.
liked exactly what you guys are playing. I'm a 70s, 80s kid, classic rock, reggae. Love it. UB40, Bob Marley.
What's your favorite album?
I like rock music. I mean, I would say it'd probably be in the realm of like Aerosmith, AC/DC, somewhere in that range. The
I
real classic
always
rock, Pink Floyd, Queen.
like to ask my guest
Yeah.
at the end of the interview
But I really love some of the newer music.
to give
I love some
us
of the newer music now that reminds me of, like there's this new band out called Greta Van Fleet. Well, they're not new to me. They sound just like Led Zeppelin, like modern day. It's incredible. So I am venturing into new realms of music. So, and of course the Latin music down here. Yeah,
I
hated
couldn't
it.
end this. I couldn't end this interview without asking you to leave a motivational statement with our listeners. Take the next 2 or 3 minutes and really motivate our listeners, both those who are disabled and those who are not disabled. If you like, you can do it in two parts.
Well, I'd say that you're stronger than you think you are. You can go through a lot more than you think you can handle and come out a winner. And it's not easy, and not everybody's going to be there for you. And sometimes you're going to be on your own, but it's worth it in the long run. You're going to encounter some bad people, but you're also going to find that there's some really good people.
That's so true. And
It's
for
hard, Duff. It's hard. But you got to look out for you because nobody else will.
yes. And you have to remain strong, eh?
You do.
You have to
And be
remain.
careful, guard yourself.
And you need to surround yourself with people that
Right.
you can trust.
And that will support you, good or
And
bad.
yeah, good support group.
Absolutely.
If you have any questions or comments regarding this program, please address them to norwill2@gmail.com. That is NORWILL number 2@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Have a happy and productive week. That's it for today. Join me next time when we will present another in the series Vision Scope. Music was provided by Rennie Williams Jr.